come into this situation now where a lot of people think that marketing is just the communications part.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. Today I am joined by a gentleman that I've wanted to have on the show for a very long time. I've seen him speak live and he's an absolute gem. We're talking to the marketing legend, Mr. Roger Edwards. So I'll say no more and let's dive straight in. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. And against all technical odds, I am talking and delighted to be talking to Mr. Roger Edwards. Roger, how are you today?
Hi, Pete. Thanks so much for inviting me on your show. And apologies for all the technical glitches that we faced trying to hook up with each other just then.
No problem at all. No problem. We were in one of those scenarios. I could see and hear you at certain points. And at other points, you could see me, but there was no audio going on. But we managed to get through it. That's the main thing.
And at least I wasn't picking my nose at the time or something like that.
Absolutely. Neither was I. Roger, do you want to just give us a quick intro as to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I describe myself as a marketing guy from Edinburgh and actually a public speaker as well. I guess I could describe myself as a career marketing professional. My current role is really as a marketing consultant. I left what I call big corporate about 6 years ago and decided to effectively become a freelance marketing consultant after about 25 years working in big corporate. But I've effectively been in marketing roles for my entire career. I guess the thing was I built myself up from a marketing assistant in big corporate all the way up to marketing director. I was even managing director of one of the business units of a big United Kingdom insurance company for a while. But what I find big corporates extremely complicated, very bureaucratic, and the bigger the company gets, the harder it actually is to be a marketeer that actually focuses on the customer. And I guess as a career marketeer, I've always had that customer focus. And I had this feeling the higher I got up in the organization, the further away from the customer I seemed to be getting. And as a marketer, that didn't feel right. I was also developing a massive keen interest in digital marketing. I was one of the first people within the big corporate to set up a blog, probably one of the first people within the financial services industry in the UK to set up a blog. That was back in 2008. Dived onto Twitter when that first came out, played with Facebook, played with Periscope, Instagram, etc., etc. And what I was finding was that we had access to all this really exciting stuff, and of course video becoming much more prevalent, but big corporate is so slow and so bureaucratic that there was almost a fear of getting involved in this stuff. And financial services, the industry is in at the time, is extremely heavily regulated, and actually getting them to embrace things like content and embrace video was extremely challenging. And in the end, an opportunity came up for me to say, do you know what? I'm going to part company with big corporate and I'm going to set myself up as a consultant to actually work with people who genuinely do want to embrace all of this new technology and start communicating and engaging with their customers through those methods.
You know, it's interesting that you've taken the leap kind of at this stage of your career. A lot of the people that I talk to that do move out of working in big corporate or even just, you know, we don't need to be talking FTSE 500 or anything like that, but just, you know, larger organizations into self-employment, they're often the people that they kind of just feel frustrated where they are. Whereas you'd obviously worked your way all the way up the ladder, but were still feeling those frustrations. And that's where you decided to take the leap for yourself.
Yeah, I think that part of it is I've got this theory that when you start within a small company, you do have the ability, partially because maybe it's a very small team, so everybody gets the customer focus, everybody gets the mission and the values of the business, and that you have actually got to the ability to be nimble, and you've got the ability to be quick, and you've got the ability to be simple. But as the business grows and you start taking on more and more people, and unless you're really, really good at it, you're going to start creating silos, the processes start getting more complicated, bureaucracy sets in, politics probably sets in, you start getting all sorts of different functions, and you may even start splitting off into divisions. And before you know it, it just becomes really hard to get things done. And I guess that I started my career within a relatively small business, which was nimble and was quite exciting and was simple. And as we got bigger, we then got bought by a bigger corporate, right, and absorbed into this mass of bureaucracy. And in the end, I think it was just, I just realized that, you know what, I sort of hanker after that smaller scale and that ability to be nimble and that ability to get things done quickly and the ability to be simple. That's what I actually craved. And I suppose it only took me 25 years to make that realization.
Well, look, the main thing is you got there in the end.
Yes.
So it's an interesting journey that a lot of us kind of take. Obviously there's those of us like yourself and me that have, we've now got an established business around us, and it's very easy when you're still sitting in the booth working, or even it doesn't even have to be in your booth, you know, at your desk working for somebody else, to look at people like you and me and the Chris Tuckers of this world and say, well, it's easy for them because they've got it all sussed out. Mm-hmm. They've figured it. So what was kind of the first steps that you took, or maybe you made some mistakes. What's the advice, the best advice you would give somebody that's thinking about embarking on this journey?
I think you've got to have a plan, definitely. And I had the advantage of having 20 odd years working within a big corporate environment. Quite a lot of that time was spent within UK financial services, and I had built up quite a high profile as an individual because I was effectively doing the marketing role all the time. A lot of that was PR orientated as well, so I was often quoted in the news media. I've been on television and radio, so I had the advantage that people in the financial services sector knew who I was. So when I decided to make the leap, I was almost sort of working in the background, putting together a plan and saying, how can I approach this network of people that I know and see if there's anything I can do to help them? If you haven't got such a network ready made, you probably need to have a bit more of a think about who your customer is going to be and who you want to work with, and maybe start mapping that out before you leave. So you probably want to don't give up the day job, as it were, before you've actually put the plan in place and know who it is that you're going to be helping and know what your offer is before you actually hand your notice in and decide to leave. I think I had that advantage of already having a great big network, so I sort of knew who my customers were going to be. And in fairness, I'd started having conversations with them at awards ceremonies and social events and that sort of thing. And it was a sort of conversation, you know, if you ever needed a marketing consultant to help you keep things simple, what would you think about it if it was me? You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Well, that's a really good idea. Why are you thinking of leaving? Well, it's only just a germ of an idea at the moment, but you never know. And of course, it starts to build like that. So when I did leave, it was almost as if I had a couple of days off, and then I started working with other people. And I think that if you haven't got that immediate network, then you've got to put some work in to build it before you go. Otherwise, you might leave and the phone doesn't ring, and you then start getting a bit worried about where the money is going to come from.
Absolutely. And, you know, actually, we're sort of getting to the next point in two different ways at the same time, which is that you've already mentioned about thinking about who your customer is. And yeah, the danger is actually about thinking about what you can do in terms of what you actually do. So copywriting or creative or artwork or whatever it might be. And thinking, well, then the world can be my customer because I can do that. Actually, no. If you start thinking about the customer first and saying, I'm going to go after financial services clients, or I'm going to go after, I don't know, haulage companies or whatever it might be, that you've got a far more defined network and defined plan to actually then start targeting your own marketing, because that's really what you're starting with in the first instance.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, I was effectively reading from my own playbook. I have this issue with marketing in the current world that we live in, Pete, in that I think that when you talk to a lot of people, and they could be marketing people, they could just be the man on the street, we've come into this situation now where a lot of people think that marketing is just the communications part, or advertising or promotion, or producing content or producing video and that sort of thing. But of course, marketing is a massive discipline. If you went to a university and did an MBA in marketing, you'd learn about customer focus, you'd learn about research, you'd learn about segmentation, targeting, positioning, you'd learn about product development and pricing and distribution, and you'd learn about communications and promotion and all of those other things. Sometimes I think today marketing has almost become synonymous just with the communications bit. And somebody will say, we need to be doing Twitter marketing, when they actually mean we need to be doing Twitter communication. And I don't know whether we've forgotten about the other elements of the marketing discipline, the marketing mix, or whether it's just the way that companies are divvying up their resources. But I've always had that traditional view that marketing is understanding the customer, targeting a specific set of customers, finding out what those customers' needs and problems are, building a product or a service to meet that need and that problem and solve it in a better and different way to your competitors, and then going out and communicating it, whether it's content or video or advertising, whatever it is. So I guess that you're absolutely right. When I approached how I was going to market myself, the first stage wasn't I need to start doing more Twitter, I need to start doing video, I need to start doing a blog. It was, who is that customer? Yep. What's their problem, and how can I, as a person with 25 years experience of marketing, how can I help them? And once I tried to effectively create what my offer was, my position, I guess you could call it if you wanted to use the jargon, once I knew what my offer was, then I could start communicating it. And yes, I did some video and I did a blog and I have a podcast as well and a website, but the first stage wasn't the communications. The first stage was, who's the customer?
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Because we've kind of come full circle. I know we kind of do mix in some of the same kind of circles online when it comes to the marketing thing. And there's so much talk now about productizing your service.
Yes.
That, you know, we are starting to come back around full circle to that old way of thinking about, you know, it isn't about trying to serve all the people all the time. It's about trying to serve some of the people to the best of your ability for every working minute that you've got. And that's the, yeah, it's one of those cyclical things that, as you know, the old ways are the best. And I guess with some of your experience, you know, I'm in my mid 30s. So we weren't, when I sort of came into marketing in inverted commas, we'd moved out of some of that old school stuff. Some of the digital things were already in place. When I first got into marketing, the newest thing that came out was Facebook, for example.
Right.
So it was a little bit further along than what you were talking about. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, when I first sat in a marketing department, they just decided to have individual screens on desks so that we could use email. Wow, that was the first, literally email was just hitting companies when I first started my career. And there was all this panic within the HR department that we'd all spend our entire lives emailing our buddies and not doing any work. And of course, nowadays, companies just worry that people are going to play with their phones and do Twitter or Facebook all day and not do any work. It's all the same sort of problem. It's just a different type of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've also got this mantra, haven't you, about keeping your marketing simple. Because it is so easy to go off on a tangent and to think right, well, we need this over here and that over there, and almost to start with the tactics. And I completely understand why people do start with the tactics, because it's the bit that you can see. It's the bit that you can sort of, in a digital world, you can almost grab hold of. It's there in front of you. But just like with your business, where you need to back up and start with your customer, with your marketing, you're playing a dangerous game if you're starting with the tactics. So do you just want to unpack a little bit about your sort of mantra of keeping your marketing simple?
Yeah. And again, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there as well about the tactics. All of this stuff is great fun. You know, imagine when one of the most successful marketing campaigns I ever did was about 15 years ago, and it was actually building a video for, it was like a case study video, and we shot it using a professional camera crew, which cost a fortune. We created a DVD, we created a nice glossy mailing pack for the DVD to go in, and then we put all those glossy mailing packs into an envelope and sent them out snail mail to 45,000 financial advisors, and the entire package cost about £100,000. Nowadays, you'd probably shoot the video on your iPhone, or you could do it on your iPhone, and you'd send a link to a YouTube or Vimeo link to your email list of 40,000 people. So it would probably cost you an absolute fraction of what it cost us before. So all of these fabulous shiny toys that we can play with, no wonder we get excited and want to dive in and start playing with them. But I still come back to the fact that you shouldn't start with the tactics until you shouldn't use the tactics of communication until you've got the plan in place. So what I said to you before about who's the customer, working out what their problem is, and then how does your product or service solve their problem then better than anybody else? Mm-hmm. That's still the element of strategy that's very important. But I've always had this sort of extra layer that I've put on top, that customers, and it doesn't matter which industry it is, whether it's financial services, cupcakes, car garages, hairdressers, whatever it is, beauty salons, health spas, people like simple communications, people like simple products, and people like simple processes. And when it starts to get complicated, whether it's the language gets complicated, or the product gets complicated, or the process gets complicated, customers start getting irritated or even annoyed, and eventually they might just say, you know what, this is too much for me, and I'm moving away. So it's not only just about identifying the customer and building that product, it's also saying, how can I make it really simple and easy for them to understand? And most importantly, if we launch it and we're successful and the company starts to grow, how do we manage to keep it simple as we get bigger, rather than falling into the traps we discussed earlier about becoming so big and siloed that effectively everything becomes more about the internal politics of the business, as opposed to keeping yourself focused on that customer need and that simple customer proposition.
Mm, absolutely. It's strategy is one of those words that people often hear and run a mile.
Yes.
And it kind of gets billed as being one of those things that big company need. I know when I've made it, when my company needs a strategy. But actually, it is so important, even for those of us that are like solopreneurs, even people, you can never start it too early. Even if you are sitting in that booth thinking about your new business, your new venture that you want to go out on your own, you can never start that strategizing process too early. And it doesn't need to be scary. It just needs to be something that's embraced.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And again, I think big corporate tends to be the culprit here. People, if you say the word strategy to them, you're right. A lot of people run, dive for cover. You know, they get that look on the face as if somebody's going to pull their teeth out, because they have this perception that strategy means going to some away day in some manor house somewhere and spending weeks sticking post-it notes on walls and then rearranging the post-it notes and putting them on another flip chart and then coming up with all sorts of mission statements and value statements and then arguing for hours about the words or whether it should be an adjective or whether it should be an adverb. And then you'll do SWOT analyses and pest analyses, and you'll get into Maslow's hierarchy of needs and grid, Boston grids and all of that. And it's enough to make you, you know, seriously, I can understand why people would want to run away from that. And I've been in those meetings and they are torture, you know, but actually the concept of strategy is absolutely sound. And I spent quite a lot of my career trying to break it down and get away from all of that SWOTs and pests and grids and P's that I call it, and just say, actually, do you know what? Strategy is mainly two bits that you do before you start communicating. And we've sort of already discussed it. The first thing is to have your offer. Build your offer, know what it is, and know who your customer is, the problem you're solving, and how you solve that problem better. And then have a goal. And that goal could be, you know, take over the world, or a certain amount of net profit, a certain amount of gross profit, a certain number of customers, a certain amount of market share, whatever it is. But if you've got an offer and a goal, then you can start attaching the communication to that, and that whole thing together, the offer, the goal, and the marketing activity, if you like, the communications, that is a strategy. It's just that the offer bit and the goal bit are probably the strategic elements, and the activity, the marketing communications, is more of the tactical stuff. But overall, it's pretty good as a strategy. You don't need to do all of the other complicated academic corporate-y things that scare the crap out of people.
No, you're dead right. And you know, actually the way this conversation's going, and I think this is the thing, when you start unpacking what sort of how you approach setting up a business, you can't help but going sort of round and touching the key basis. So as you rightly pointed out, you need your offer, you need your product, you need to understand who your customer is, what their problems are, etc. You've now just mentioned goals, and they are also vital for anybody that's an entrepreneur, regardless of the size of your business, in order to keep you focused and on the right track. And just by having the goal in place, it gives you that driving force, which is one of the things that you need to have as a self-starter if you're working on your own. But secondly, it gives you that kind of benchmark to see how things are going, and it almost makes certain decisions easier. So, I mean, do you have a, I know we were talking about goals in terms of sort of business setup. So, but do you use those as well as in your own consultancy for your own sort of personal motivation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was down in Yorkshire yesterday doing a strategy day for a company that I've been working with for a while. And we spent a lot of time on goals because, again, I just believe that you have to have them before you can start doing the communication, and you've got to align them to your offer. So in the same way as I will try to teach my customers how to create offers, how to create goals, I have to do that myself. Sometimes, admittedly, you know, I let things slip. But what I do make sure that I do, Pete, is have somebody to hold me accountable for those goals. Now, obviously, as an independent person, I work mainly on my own. I have a VA that does some of the work for me, helps me with the podcast, helps me with my website. But on the whole, it's just me. And I guess that one of the things that I do miss about big corporate, and there aren't many things that I miss about big corporate, but one of the things I do miss is, say I need to run an idea past somebody, or I'm struggling with a concept or something like that. If I was in big corporate, I'd wander down the corridor, grab a coffee, and there were 20 or 30 people I could stop and talk to on the way and maybe run that idea past them. Or I'd have a boss who I could run it past, or a friend in a different department. But when you're working on your own, before you build a company with other people in it, you haven't really got any of that. So yes, have goals, and I set myself goals, but through some sort of accountability group, whether it's a mastermind type of arrangement, similar to the things that Chris Ducker does, or whether it's just have a friend who works in a different industry or works for a different company or is just a similar, doing a similar consultancy role to you, have that person, meet them regularly, tell them what your goals are and say, right, over the next year, however, whatever the period of time is, I want you to hold me accountable to the goals that I've set for myself. And I honestly find that by doing that, it really does introduce quite a lot of discipline into what you're doing.
Yeah, you're dead right. And the great thing about having goals and setting a rhythm for them as well. So I kind of have a, I have a sort of rhythm to the way that I look at my goals. So I have personal goals as well as business goals. I should also say that I think it's just good as a human to know that you're personally on a journey, that you are trying to better yourself and that kind of thing. So I have a rhythm to them, and it's not rocket science. It just fits in with the calendar year. So, you know, coming up into December, I will naturally start reviewing how this year has gone and what is it that I want to achieve for the next year.
Yeah.
Then that gets broken down into quarters. And then every quarter I have it in my diary on the first day of each quarter, I am going to spend 2 or 3 hours just mapping out what those 3 months are going to look like. And so it's not rocket science, but by having the goal there in the first place, it then allows you to set this rhythm and gives you that reference point to keep on coming back to. Are things working? Aren't things working? What needs to improve? What's exceeded expectation? All of that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, even from a business point of view, you can say, right, well, you know, I'm now, I don't know, 20% behind goal, but actually, although I'm 20% behind, there was this bit over here that worked like an absolute charm. So I know that in the next 3 months, I need to focus in on that because that's what's going to catch me up to where I want to be.
Absolutely. And if you go back to the sort of the strategy concept, you know, if all you do is dive into the tactics without having set the goal, without being completely clear what your offer is, then your tactics are going to fail. Mm-hmm. But the problem is people might say, well, I tried doing a podcast and it didn't work, or I tried doing social media marketing and it didn't work. And actually, what probably didn't work was the fact that you went in it without a strategy, and that's why it didn't work. Not that the medium isn't effective, it's just that you didn't go in having done the preparatory work necessary to make it a success. Because if you'd said, well, this is the offer I want to communicate, and my goal is that by using Twitter or whatever it might be, I will procure 100,000 customers, and I'll have to do it by communicating in this certain way, then you've got much more of a measure of to what success might be or might not be. But just going in and saying, we need to do some Twitter, we need to do some video, we need to do some whatever it might be, communication, then you're almost setting yourself up to get it wrong and to fail.
The number of times I've been sat in meetings with clients and they've said, oh, well, we need to do this because XYZ does it and they're our competitor.
Yeah.
I heard the grunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just completely obliterates the point, really. It's, you know, now one of the things that in my mind anyway, that has changed as marketing has evolved and where we're not kind of going back full circle is in my limited understanding, brackets. I've never worked in it like this, close brackets. The traditional marketing, the slightly more traditional versions of marketing, didn't rely quite so much on the generation of content. The strategy was that this is our advertising channel, this is the messaging we're putting across. You maybe put a narrative through some of your advertising, but then ultimately you were guiding people to a purchase decision, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas now with the evolution of the internet and blogs and the readiness of content through Google and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all this kind of stuff, the marketing process has taken on a slightly different element about demonstrating value. It was almost like before it was about claiming that the value was there because you're doing it on an 8-sheet somewhere, whereas now it's about demonstrating that value through delivering content. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think the traditional advertising model, the traditional marketing communications model was always about interrupting people. It was always about throwing a product in their face whilst they're watching Game of Thrones or Downton Abbey or Top of the Pops or whatever it was, the Pops that was on the BBC, but you know what I mean. Or billboards that grab your attention as you're driving past, or pop-ups on your computer. Mm-hmm. Content is so much more engaging because it's stuff that actually helps people, educates them, probably entertains them as well. And it's stuff that they actually don't mind consuming. Whereas most of us, most of the time, get a bit hacked off with adverts interrupting us. And I know there are ways that you can cope with that. You can zip through the adverts on Sky Plus and you can have pop-up blockers on your PC. But on the whole, it is quite annoying to be interrupted by advertising. Content doesn't do that. Content does engage people. You know, producing a booklet on a particular subject that backs up your proposition is something that people might want, actually want to read, you know, the best restaurants in Edinburgh or something like that, as opposed to adverts for restaurants in Edinburgh, is just a subtly different way of doing it. Mm. And it's almost to the stage where I don't want to break my own rule by overly complicating it, but I almost think that the content is more of part of your offer, to be honest, than marketing communications tactics, because, you know, an advertising campaign might last for 3 months and then you'll have a break and then you'll go and have a different advertising campaign for another 3 months. To my mind, your content, the helpful stuff, the entertaining stuff, the inspiring stuff is always there. It sort of never stops. And for that reason, it feels more strategic rather than tactical. And I just like to say to people, you know, if you build a product, you build a service, also build the content around it so that it's part of the offer, so that it never feels like it's part of a finite marketing campaign or marketing promotion. It's always there and always engaging and always something that customers really like to consume.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the difficulty, I suppose, with that is that in this world where you can just pay $50, you know, you can sign up today, pay $50 and get Facebook ads online, or you can publish a blog and it be indexed in Google in the next 3 days.
Yeah.
The thing with content marketing is that it takes time. It kind of, it's about the consistency. It's about the authority. It's frankly, it's the reason why people like you and me have podcasts, because that is the way that we engage with content marketing the best. You know, it is a commitment to the cause. So just rewinding this conversation right back to the beginning of the person sat in the booth, once you've figured out your customer and your offer, what the problem is that you're about to solve, it's almost at that point, that is the moment you can start creating some kind of content to start building that content library, which is only going to give you a head start when, you know, when you're actually into the full swing of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I did. And you mentioned podcasts. I have a podcast as well. The original idea for the podcast was to remind people who I was when I left big corporate. And it is a long game, Pete, as you know. I think I'll get the number slightly wrong, but I'd done 33 episodes of my podcast before I actually got a piece of paid work from it directly as a result of the podcast. And that was probably writing an article. So, you know, I got paid £500 or something for it. It was episode something like 89 before I got what I would say was a really meaty piece of consultancy, which was a really decent amount of money, which, you know, was the sort of income that I was planning and had a goal to achieve. So you're talking nearly 2 years of podcasting before it actually started to bring in the big ticket items. And that's the sort of long game that you've got to play.
Yeah, I can fully agree with that. So we're about 50, we're somewhere between 55 and 60 episodes in by the time this one goes live. And it's just over a year, because there was a couple of unenforced breaks in the first year, unfortunately. I can say at this point now, I'm just starting to get the sort of inquiries coming in of, oh, so we can work with you. Of course you can. You know, I'm not doing this because you have to work with me. But if anybody does, they're more than welcome to certainly drop me a message and you know, we see where it goes. So it's, yeah, but, you know, that's taken me, what, 15 or 16 months just to get to that stage of the conversation.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then you get people, you know, those the people that are doing that are people that have maybe been with me for the lion's share of that time. Whereas actually, you know, there's new people finding the podcast all the time. I can see that from the figures. Mm. But you know, it's going to take them another, you know, 18 months, 2 years maybe before they're in a position to reach out to me. So that's where the cycle starts. And this slow moving beast starts to crank into sort of motion. The other thing, of course, with having a podcast, I'm sure you had a very similar thing to me, was that, like, for the first 3 months, it's like you're talking to nobody.
Yes, indeed.
It's crickets out there. I mean, it's dire. So it's a rite of passage, I think, that everybody's got to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. But and that's why a lot of podcasts fail, of course. The, you know, the average is somebody who gives up after 7 episodes. Now, if we're both saying, you know, it's taken us between 30 and 80 episodes to actually start getting business as a result of it, I think you're going to have to be a bit more committed than 7.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, Richard, I'm going to edit that bit out. Roger, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best place that they can find you?
Thanks for having me on the show, Pete. The two places probably best is my website, and it's dead easy. It's rogeredwards.co.uk, and it's Roger with an R-O-G-E-R. There's no D in my name. And that's the website. Or Twitter is where I tend to hang out most on social media, and that's Roger_Edwards.
Roger_Edwards. Fantastic. The links to both of those will be in the show notes, and in the intro and outro there'll be a link to where those show notes are. So thank you again so much for your time. It's been a real blast talking to you.
Fantastic, Pete. You take care. Speak to you soon.
You too, mate. Cheers. There was so much in that episode that I think we can all take and apply to our business. Roger is an absolute star, and he has such a clear and concise way of putting across both business and marketing strategy. I'm certainly going to go and listen to that one again. I really enjoyed listening to it in the edit for a second time. Show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/059, and we hope to see you in our Facebook group to see exactly how you are applying Roger's advice to your business. See you next week.